This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is iFanboy Booksplode Homicide, the graphic novel, part one, and maybe two. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with my life partner, Josh Flanagan.
I wish that I could, like, come out with, like, good cop banter, but I don't have it.
You're my partner.
It.
You know, yeah. You and I will stand over our body for life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No,
assuming that body is made out of paper and square bound and is in comic book form.
I mean, there's a lot of corpses been left behind.
That's true. We are iFanboy. And every month we review a collected edition on this here show called Booksplode. It is unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy. Thanks for being a patron. And we're talking about Homicide, the graphic novel, part one by Philippe Squarzoni, who wrote and drew it based on the novel by, well, not a novel, based on the book by David Simon.
It's a novel.
Well, not a novel, technically, I think it's fiction.
I don't believe so.
I'm pretty sure.
It's a nonfiction. Okay, so this is, we're right off, right away.
Pretty sure. I'm pretty sure novel is considered fiction, but it doesn't matter. It does not matter.
While novels are most common, this is just some random website, so I don't know what I was about to say. I'm going to try to find a better source. Go on.
And we're going to try to make this not a show entirely about Homicide, the TV show or the book, but we can't guarantee anything. This is a hardcover book that came out in 2023, and there's actually two parts. There's part one, part two. I've read both of them. Josh has only read part one.
A little bit of two.
I can't guarantee nothing from part two will come into the discussion, but it doesn't really matter. It's the same.
I've read the book, and I've seen Homicide, and I've seen The Wire, so I've seen it.
The adaptation is the same, basically, so it's not like any different. It's basically, they took David Simon's book and cut it up into two graphic novels. This is the first half of the story, technically, we're talking
that
about.
That said, it stands on its own.
Oh, totally.
Because there's, we'll call them plot lines, but there's
also
stories.
Spoilers.
Yes.
For the book that came out in 1991 and the show that was on from 1993 to 1999. So FYI.
And then The Wire that was on from 2000 to 2006. Because if you know those programs, you will see things that are familiar in here.
Yeah. Including Jay Landsman.
I do feel like the first book ended in such a way that if you didn't know there was more, it could stand on its own, I think.
It ends. Yeah, I think so.
The book itself, again, like I don't know if I'm giving a lot away, but the book doesn't give you all the answers.
Oh, it ends on them interrogating the guy, right?
Yeah, like you want to, you know, basically it's just, you know, like that, you know, some murders aren't going to get solved, or at least they're not going to go down.
Well, that was the sort of talk around the TV show, right? Was that not since Hill Street Blues, and even more so than that, had there been a show considered more realistic about being a police detective. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still a network TV show, so they still took a lot of liberties and made it more dramatic. And then it got more so with The Wire. But really, you know, David Simon's book, in which he was at the time a Baltimore Sun reporter who took a sabbatical to embed himself for one calendar year with the Baltimore Police Department Homicide Division, a year in the killing streets. It's usually just a year with this division. So you're only following what happens in that year. Some cases remain open. Some cases get solved. Some cases just disappear. Some stick with the detectives. But it's really just about this 12 calendar month period. And it doesn't mean everything's going to tie up in a nice bow. And a lot of it doesn't, including, you know, the one big case that also becomes the big case on the TV show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is not a spoiler. And I looked it up and it's still unsolved, which is fucking awful.
Yeah, it is.
Philippe Squarzoni is a French graphic novelist who read the book, and he said, I really want to make this my next project. He said, I could see it in my head. He had a correspondence with David Simon, who said, I don't read comics, but okay. And that's how we got here. He used a lot of file photographs and things of the time period. This takes place in Baltimore. A lot of the people, I've seen photographs of them. They look, you know, fairly accurate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I recognize Landsman.
Detective Jay Landsman ended up being an actor on Homicide. I mean, on The Wire. So he's recognizable right away. But what I really liked about this book, and it's basically in black and white with some highlight colors and gray tones and things like that.
It's like black and white or blue. Like the white changes depending on what it is. It's either like a shade of blue or a shade of beige.
Right.
There's a little bit of red here and there. I mean, my basic theme is my initial impression of the book was I thought, I don't know if this is going to be necessary.
Mm-hmm.
It is a beautiful book in its prose and in its character description creation. Not creation, but...
You mean the novel or this?
The novel is,
not
right?
The novel. The nonfiction book?
I'm going to call it a novel. I'm not big into adaptations for the most part. Mm-hmm. Like, if something is great in the form that it is, then that's right. Enough for me a lot of times. I think it became apparent very quickly that I don't think this adds to it. You don't need this or whatever, but it really was it was beautiful. It was such a well-crafted comic book. And then I look in the back and it just, because I didn't really know who Squarzoni is. And, you know, he's done all of these, you know, political and war zone stories.
Right.
Like he's very accomplished in doing serious work in the comic book form, which is, I can't back this up, but I think is much more common in Europe than it is in the US.
Oh, I'm sure it is. And this is also a very political and war zone.
Oh, absolutely.
Story.
I kept going back to the cover of the first volume that we're talking about. It's dark. It is raining. It's a very minimalist, but very natural sort of set. And there's basically the only light, there's a couple in the background, but like he's holding a flashlight. And you are basically looking at somebody who is looking at a body on the ground in the street.
The faceless detective.
But just the way that the light from the flashlight is depicted, I'm looking at it now. There's no like lines around the fingers. Like it's done with shapes. It's perfect looking for what it has to be.
I'll do you one better. I can tell you what the guy's expression is and you can't see his face at all.
Yes.
That's just through the way he has depicted the shapes of the shadows.
Yep.
And we see his nose, we see his ears, but we don't see anything else.
The hunch of his shoulders, his slightly like loosened tie. You know, it's not like there's one wrinkle in the shirt. You know who it is. You know what it sounds like. You know, because we've seen those shows. And as soon as I saw that Jay Landsman looked like Jay Landsman, I knew that the others were probably real too. Like, because they all look like of the time.
Everyone's got a mustache.
Yeah, they look like cops from the late 80s, which is what they are. So there was that sort of image thing. And then as I went through it, I was also sort of reminded of just how exquisite David Simon's prose is.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that he captures the cops, the way they speak, their patter, their world-weary sarcasm, the really dark humor.
Well, if you recall on the Homicide TV show, David Simon's book was the source, but he was not on the show. That was a Tom Fontana, Barry Levinson show. Mm-hmm. The very first episode he wrote was the Robin Williams post-Super Bowl episode. And one of the big scenes in that one is that the cops are all making jokes and Robin Williams overhears them and yells at them for disrespecting his wife who'd been murdered. But it's a very much a big moment of this is how the cops have to survive this horror, is to make jokes about it.
Mm-hmm.
that's something that ran through his very first episode of TV he ever wrote, was about how the vernacular is their coping mechanism for all the horror they deal with.
And it reminds me of, like, you'll hear, you know, army guys, you know, there's a certain style of humor and sarcasm that exists there that, for one thing or another, like, it's its own thing. I feel like it's going to be really hard to write from scratch. Like, he just heard it so much, David Simon, that he could sort of put it in here. But no one talks like that. And it feels like fake, but I know it's not. You know, and so, like, that sort of dialogue that's all through The Wire. There's a scene in here that is in The Wire, and it's, I can't remember who he's talking to. I think it was Bunk is talking to Jimmy, and he's like, I just want to thank you. And he's like, for what? He's like, I knew you were going to fuck me, but I really appreciate that you did it so gently. And then he's like, I had to. It was your first time.
Right.
And, like, that comes out of this, and it's real.
It was confusing because one of the characters' nicknames in this book is Bunk.
Bunk or Bunky just means, like, your partner, I think.
Right,
like,
but it was just confusing because they kept saying it.
I also occurred to me that LaTanya Wallace is the main sort of tragedy of the first season is Wallace. And that occurred to me when I was reading this, too. There we go. You're going to know more about Homicide. I'm going to know more about The Wire. That's how it is. And I consider it completely fair game for David Simon to use things over and over.
Of course.
This is not in this, and it may have been in the second volume, I'm not sure, but it was in the book, and it was in Homicide, and it was in The Wire, where they convinced suspects that the photocopier was a lie detector machine,
right?
And they'd, like, never seen one. And it's a little making fun of the poor, but also the other thing that goes through it is that, like, for the most part, criminals get caught because they're very stupid.
Right.
And that's sort of a through line that goes through the whole thing.
Yeah, LaTanya Wallace becomes a Dina Watson on the TV show. And then
That's right.
That becomes the case that runs through Homicide all the way through, is that they're unable to solve this murder, which was a real murder, which was still unsolved, even though they think they know who did it, but they don't have any proof. Like you said at the beginning, it's like, what is the point? And I had a bit of that because, again, I love that TV show and I love that book. But I think what it brings to this is it brings the sense of monotony and a sense of drudgery. He does a really good job of reusing art. Like when a character is going through the same thing over and over and over, like you'll use the same drawing of the person while everything else around them changes, as it becomes like a metaphor for every day there's a body and it's probably going to be unsolved because the way Baltimore was in 1989 or whatever when he was going along. And I thought the art was really strong in that sense. It really gave the sense of the crushing weight of what these guys go through and what the people in that city and what the victims and all the everyone involved in this goes through, but it's through the eyes of the detective. So that's where you're seeing it.
And it's that sort of like endless night and lethargy, because this is the night shift, basically, I think. I don't think...
Well, it goes back and forth. They switch up. But yeah, a lot of it's a night shift.
But the book is kind of drawn in that. And there's a line in it somewhere like, you know, like cop work isn't running around and drawing your gun and screaming. Like everything that these cops do is slow and sort of methodical, and there's so much of the book is just people looking.
Right. Silently looking at a crime scene, silently looking at reports, silently looking at a whiteboard, silently looking at a body. Like, it's just silently observing.
Yeah.
I had to really stop myself from constantly going to, who's this supposed to be? Because the characters aren't one-to-ones from the show, though a couple of them are, but...
Well, again, like, I feel like I remember the book, the names from the book more than I remember the show. Like, with the show, I knew... Like, I don't know who... The one-to-one people are. Like, I don't know who Andre Brower was supposed to be in the show.
Frank Pemberton was Harry Edgerton, one of the only black detectives on the...
You couldn't tell that they were black in this. Actually, that's another thing that I did notice, is that, like, you knew that a lot of the criminals and the victims, because they're in, you know, it's a very black city, and that's where a lot of crime was, but nobody was really drawn to be black or white.
I don't know about that.
Well, I mean, if you, like, you got it from hair, and maybe you got it from face shape to a certain extent, but shading, but as you look through it, it's not sort of crystal clear that that's what it is.
That's true. Edgerton is similar. Pemberton from New York, highly educated, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A loner. Pellegrini, who is the sort of the rookie who comes from the mayor's detail, is the same as Bayless, who comes from the mayor's detail and is a rookie. They both end up with the Adina Watson case. So the leader is Lieutenant Giardello, and the book is Lieutenant Daddario. They're called G&D.
When's the last time you watched that show?
Episodes? I mean, I've watched it so much. I know that show very well. I just recently bought the whole series because it's not available streaming because of the music. After Andre Brower died, it was my favorite TV actor of all time, and Homicide being one of my favorite shows of all time. So I bought the collected DVD set, which means if my luck holds, it will be available for streaming very soon because that happened after I bought the ER set however many years ago.
Yeah.
There's the big man. You know, there's the big man character who was Ned Beatty. I almost said Warren Beatty, but that wasn't right. Some of the Western ones are sort of several characters merged into one, but those are the ones that were the most like one-to-one.
Okay.
there's not really a female detective. They mentioned one, but they don't really show her in this book.
We spend most of our time with one squad because there's sort of two.
Yeah, for sure.
I also feel like, and again, this may have been more in the second book, but I feel like we didn't spend much time in the box, in the interrogation room, which I feel like it was a really big part of the novel.
Yeah, the second book, there was a couple of diversions into sort of like, you know, because it mostly just follows a straight calendar line through the year, but there's a couple of diversions. And one of them in the second book, there's an entire chapter about what it's like for them to go to the courthouse and testify. And a lot of that ends up in The Wire, but sort of like this sidestep into having to testify, knowing that the case will be found not guilty. It was interesting. I ended up, at the end of the day, feeling bad for everyone.
Sure.
Involved, because just like The Wire was just about the cops, it was about the whole system. This book ends up becoming sort of an indictment of the state of urban society in America in the 1980s and 90s. And in some cases, still to this day, Baltimore is still in fairly bad shape.
Yeah. I don't think he'd fully formed that idea yet, or at least hadn't David Simon. Like, it's there. But I think that by the time he gets around to The Wire, like, it's like, okay, no, this is a whole thing about the sort of state of everything. And I found myself thinking a lot about how we think about cops. And I know I read the book, it was probably 20 years ago. The conversation around the police and around racism, it's not new, but it's a much more widespread conversation now. And sort of you watch these guys, and this was sort of on The Wire too. And I'm trying to be like, well, are these homicide cops making the system worse or better? Like, there's a lot about sort of how awful the police department used to be and then how bad it still is. And it's just really interesting to think about it. And it was the same thing in The Wire, like cops from all sorts of demographics. And it was kind of almost like the haves against the have nots in a way. But like, why are the have nots like this? Well, there's all sorts of reasons. And it's, I don't know, like it's like there's some bad people. And then there's a bunch of other people around who either aren't helping or, I don't know, this weird apathy that exists of hope, apathy of hopelessness, I guess. You know, it's fascinating to think about sort of academically, but it's real. So it's sad. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you feel sad for all these people. Like, it's just dead faces throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, I think he doesn't follow those homicide detectives who are apathetic. And also, sure. He just mentions it here, those guys don't really stay a long time anyway. They get cycled out. But, you know, there's a couple of guys that pop up once or twice that are not really the main cast who are kind of jerks. But for the most part, he follows the guys who are really dedicated to their job. And he had that. You know, during the George Floyd protest, David Simon got into a lot of online fights about people who wanted to abolish all the cops. And he's like, well, there's certainly a lot of cops that could be abolished and should be abolished, but the homicide detectives are really not those kind of cops.
Yeah.
And that was like a hill he was going to die on the internet.
But there's a thing in here, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of the cop. You know, there's the guy who's investigating the shooting that was possibly a cop. And pretty much turned out it was.
That was Worden.
He's, you know, 20 years, he was a cop in the 60s. And so he has that sort of older version of like, no, you hit the cop, then everybody goes down.
Right.
You know, the brotherhood, the code of silence, the blue, you know, it's all sort of there. And it's not good. And it's not necessarily always right. But I understand it. I also understand why none of the people on the street want to be witnesses and they want to say anything. They don't trust anybody. It's that hopelessness. It's very, like, complicated, basically. It's so much shades of gray.
Well, that's what all of his work about the police force have been, is it's all complicated. Everyone wants everything to be simple, no matter what side of the argument they're on. But it's no one side is simple. Yeah. Everyone's side is nuanced. And as this book is, it's all shades of gray.
And they're caught in a storm of imperfectness. You know, like, it's really, like you said, it's sad. You know, when you watch people, whoever they are, they push through every day. To me, it's sort of, I don't know, this is like, it wants to make me feel good about myself. I always think about it, season 4 of The Wire, McNulty goes to pick up Bodie, and they've been enemies the whole time, and they both of them have sort of matured, and they go have lunch together, you know? And it's like the sheepdog and the sheep clocking in at the beginning of the day, and then, you know, like in the old cartoons, it sort of reminds me of that. There's no real good or bad, and it's hard to say that about people who, like, are, you know, they're out there selling drugs, but what else is, that's what happens there. I think books like this are so important. They don't solve anything, but they let you see things. They let you try to understand a different part of the world.
The one thing I thought done really well here was that it was paced extremely well, and that I didn't want to put it down. Mm-hmm. And it's partially due to that story being so well told in the original source material. And Squarzoni says in the beginning that he basically takes a lot of the text straight from the book. You know, he's not a native English speaker as it is, but also just to honor the language. Mm-hmm. But it says, We've remained faithful to the original narration and dialogue. At times, the words in this book are offensive, but that's the standard thing now. But it's so well-paced. The chapter chunks are just long enough where you feel like you're getting a lot of whatever he's talking about in that chapter, but you know, you're not there forever. You're moving on to the next one pretty quickly. And I really flew through them because, you know, originally we talked about doing this and I thought, okay, we'll definitely read the first one because it's pretty thick. And then I finished it so fast, I just moved right on to the second one immediately and finished that one pretty quick too. It's just really compelling reads. And some of the best nonfiction work is stuff that can really open your eyes to situations and lives and places that are not at all like what you know or grew up. I mean, I grew up in New York City in the 80s. But New York City in the 80s, while rough and tumble in a way that young people now would never recognize, was certainly not Baltimore in the 80s.
Which is how bad that must have been.
Right.
And was and is. And, you know, I mean, I don't know what it is now.
It's still bad. I remember we went to Baltimore Con one year and took the wrong road down to the highway and drove basically through the wire. Mm-hmm. And it looked just like that, you know, whenever that was, you know, 15 years ago or whatever it was. I don't want to say like he touched a nerve or found like a lightning bolt or whatever, but like he found something in these characters that helped to tell a larger story. And then he did that in a book. He helped to do it in a TV show. And then he was able to take all that together and make his magnum TV opus. Mm-hmm. That is the favorite show of every white guy in his 40s. It's a very compelling read. No matter what format you're experiencing the story, whether it's the original prose book or whether it's the adaptation TV show, whether it's this graphic novel, whether it's The Wire, which is a version of this story. Mm-hmm. It's all very compelling. And I think it's important to read these things and to understand the lives that people are going through. Even if it happened 25 years ago, but that's not even enough. But it was, what, 30 years ago?
What was it, 1990?
91 was the book.
33 years?
33 years ago. It's still pretty relevant today.
I would recommend if you were going to, like, read the book first. Read the prose book first. Wait 15 years or so, then come back and read this. I think that's really going to give you context. And then have watched Through the Wire, let's say 8 times. Something like that. Or watch through Homicide, which is much more labor intensive because network seasons used to be way too long.
Well, the first two seasons of Homicide are 12 episodes total.
I think you could read this book. I know you could read it on your own without having to sort of go back, you know, and not understand it as well as the novel. But I think that you could read this and you'd get everything you need out of it. But I think you'd also read this and be like, wow, I want more of this. I'm going to go to the novel and like really get in depth to it. And I don't think you're going to lose anything either way.
No, I think what you get out of this, though, is like we said earlier, is that it's a very sort of procedural documentarian style of the drudgery of what's, and you don't get that visual, you know, flair in the book. You have to imagine it. You can see it. But Squarezone does a really good job here of making you feel that repetitive nature, sort of the downtrodden, depressing nature of having to investigate all these homicides. And most of them go unsolved, and pressure from the bosses and the media and the people in the neighborhood and the whiteboard where the names never turn black. And I felt really good sense of that on your shoulders the entire time.
I think, too, that I've talked so much about the story and the writing. And again, the prose is magnificent. Really, I cannot oversell that. But it's a really good comic book.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I do have one criticism.
Yeah.
From a storytelling standpoint, there were certain pages where it was full page spread. And then there were certain pages where just the top panel was full page. Yeah, and then the others went down. It would break the flow. Quite regularly.
He used the same sort of layout for the double page spreads almost every time. And it took me way too long into the book to figure it out. It's like one panel across the top and then two across under that and then six. But you had to read them across every time.
Yep.
And my brain just didn't do that every time. And that totally threw me off. Yeah.
And it wasn't every time. Some of the pages.
It wasn't every time. He used it a lot.
The other thing that would happen is that because of the way it was printed, which is a hardcover at this point, there may be a soft cover, but either way, it's not going to lay flat. And so it wasn't entirely clear that there wasn't two or one panels at the top because of the crease of the pages.
Yes, I agree with you. That's the problem.
It took me a while where I kept getting lost and then I was aware of it. And so I'd look for the signs and then I'd know how to read it. But that was a thing that happened a bunch. And I don't know if the printing wasn't taken into account or because it's just different expectations in a European comic or that's this guy's thing.
He likes that single skinny top panel.
Yep.
And then this one has six panels across the middle and then four in the bottom. Because the overall structure was the same, but the details were different, my brain off missed it. And so that was an issue.
You're looking for that visual pattern, and it was varied, I think, too often. That's my criticism, is that the flow would get disrupted as I was reading for a while until I kind of learned how. But even then, I had to stop and think about it more often than I wanted to.
And the thing that, I mean, it's not so much his fault, but it is what it is that when you got a TV show, you got a lot of different actors, and you can imprint on the actor. But here, you've got just, in some cases, a lot of dudes with mustaches. And so,
yeah, that's true.
outside of the main couple of four guys who we followed all the time, like Landsman or Edgerton or Warden, you ended up a lot of just brunette dudes with brunette mustaches. And so I was like, wait, which one was that again? And
yeah,
but that's just the consequence of, you know, nonfiction.
And I just accepted that. Like I recognize the cases more than I recognize the cops, which is fine, kind of. Although the descriptions of the personalities and the characters of the cops are so good. They're so excellent that they, like, there were these fully fleshed out people who have to be broken in some way to be able to do this job. And they keep going back to the fact that so many people can't and don't, and they go.
It's hard.
They're freaks.
It grinds you down having to look at death all day long and have it mostly go unpunished or unspoken for. Like, that's what the whole motto was, right? We speak for the dead or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. I was reading some article about this. So I was looking for something from David Simon about it. And he said, it was originally came out in France. And so the versions he got sent were in French. And he had a bunch sent to the guys who were still alive. And they were sort of, if you can imagine, a bunch of like 60 or 70-year-old murder police, homicide cops having to deal with a French graphic novel. But they were tickled that they were in these French comics. Trouble seems so foreign to them. It's not a fun or an easy read, but it was an enjoyable and a good read, if that makes sense. And I think if you like nonfiction work in your comics, if you like sort of journalistic work, if you like real life stuff, these are very good volumes.
Yep, I agree. It's absolutely worth your time. It's one of the most well done things I've seen in a while. And that's including the fact that I know the story and I've read it before. And so, you know, I went in with that like, all right, we'll see. And it totally was worth it.
So that is Homicide, the graphic novel, part one. And also, we'll just say part two from First Second Press, the leader in high quality comic book storytelling.
Man, they came out of the gate getting it right and have gotten better.
They didn't pay me for that. I just did it.
Yeah.
By Philippe Squarzoni, based on the book by David Simon. You can check those out. I think they're really terrific. I gave them to several people for Christmas this year.
Yeah, including me. Beautiful production and printing.
Yes, for seconds always.
Sure.
20 years ago, this would have been put out by like Top Shelf.
Kitchen Sink.
Yeah, or Kitchen Sink or somebody. Mm-hmm. So you can check those out. We are at ifanboy.com. Every week, Josh and I or some friends will talk about the week's new comics. This is a bi-monthly Booksplode show. It alternates with Josh's bi-monthly Talksplode interview show. Last month, he talked to... Who would you talk to last
Let's
month?
Let's just say we average six a year. Rob Williams.
That's right. Yeah,
Rob Williams of 2000 AD and Petrolhead in the U.S. most recently, and a lot of Marvel and DC work here and there.
You can find all those shows as well as our monthly Media Splode show where Josh and our original co-host Ron and I talk about non-comics media. All that's available at ifanboy.com. We have almost 1,400 shows there for you to enjoy. We've been doing them for 20 some odd years.
We don't know how to stop.
We enjoyed this one. I enjoyed talking about this. Yep. I know what we're doing next, but Josh doesn't even know. But we'll tell you as soon as...
I was going to say, you just said you knew, and I was like, but I don't know. Okay.
Well, by the time the show comes out, Josh will know, but Josh will know when the book arrives on his doorstep in 48 hours.
Oh, jeez.
So we'll be talking about that next in 2 months, and we'll let you know on our regular show what that's going to be. Probably this week's show, actually. So thanks for listening. Do we say anything else on this? I don't remember. It's been a long month.
It's fine. It's
all right. Well, thank you for listening. This was Homicide, the graphic novel, part one by Philippe Squarzoni, based on the book by David Simon. And until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
I don't even remember how to end the show anymore. I don't know what's happening.
It doesn't matter. No one listens to this part. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.